Hello, everyone, and welcome to NWR Connectivity episode 365. I'm your host, John Reardon, and joining me, as always, is Neil Ronahan.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, Neil. We have a extra special guest today. Straight from Good Vibes Gaming, we have Steve Bowling.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Welcome to the show. You're one of the few non-NWR people that I think we've had on the show. You got beat out by Shine Sparkers, but
I feel like we enjoy a special relationship with NWR. For most out of state events, we have an NWR person cover it for us. So NWR is on GVG a lot.
Yeah. Matt Sawadniak and Adam Abu Nasser have both like done. I think at this point, both of them have done multiple things for you over the years, which definitely always happy to support a friendly group.
Yes. Yeah, we're always glad to have you folks on the channel for any reason, but it is especially helpful when there's a Nintendo event.
Yeah. One of these days, listen, if there's ever a Nintendo event in Iowa, I got you. Don't worry about it.
Call you up immediately.
Yep. It's all under control. And sometimes we get a demo at Best Buy. That's about the most we get.
Yeah, whenever I don't have like a less than a year old kid, I can kind of sometimes do New York events too. But there was definitely an era when there was a pandemic and I had an infant where I was like, nah, you know what? I'm not going to go in and cover Splatoon right now.
Yeah. Just deploy Matt.
Yeah.
We don't need Matt. If he dies at the event, that's fine.
Wow.
Yeah. Listen, the great thing about being a volunteer site, everyone's expendable. Nobody's paid. It's all fine. But whoa. I guess for, yeah, welcome to John Reardon's NWR.
It's like Squid Games.
Yeah, only the strongest survive. But I was gonna say, I guess for people who I assume there's lots of crossover in our audiences, but maybe for people who aren't familiar with Good Vibes Gaming, do you want to just kind of quickly introduce yourself and your site?
Yeah, thanks. So GVG is a group of six friends. We talk about video games. Obviously, you probably know us from places we've worked before. Game Explained, Nintendo Life. I've been seen on Kotaku and IGN in the past. But we all came together to share our love of gaming with the world. We try to promote mental health and inclusivity and positivity in gaming because there's just so much negativity out there. You can find us at youtube.com/@GVG because now there's an at symbol in every single social media app on Earth. We're also at patreon.com/GVGaming. We got a ton of different stuff. I won't do the whole ad, but come check us out if you haven't. But I hope that if you're a fan of NWR, that you'll find something to love at GVG.
Yeah, I think it's if you like us, you will probably like them.
I will especially call out a lot of Derek's retrospectives, like the Shin Megami Tensei one and the Monolith Soft one that I did last year.
That Monolith Soft one was great.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Like, love, and I love seeing content like that because I feel like that's one of those things where like our collective degree of nerdery is very good for like, no, like we're gonna like tell you the story of these companies in a way that like kind of people with this view of the industry and this kind of like we've been embedded with it for a while can tell those stories well.
Yeah, thanks. Derek does a great job on those retrospectives. He's working on a Zelda one right now. So I think the first part of that should be going live like any day now.
Sweet.
That's awesome.
Good timing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of Zelda, you just posted a preview about a Zelda game.
I did.
Is it like Wind Waker HD?
Obviously.
Did that come out?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're finally getting the missing Wii U ports.
Booted up the Wii U and put on Wind Waker HD, and he was like, "Daddy, is this the new Zelda game?" I'm like, "Yo, bro, no. Let me show you some good stuff."
Did you explain Zonai lore to your 4-year old?
I mean, we'll get there. I'll have to put on your video for him. See what he says. He did watch the trailer from Tears of the Kingdom for the other week. And was very blown away by Link like diving in the air and was like, "This is so cool." And then he turned to me, he's like, "Daddy, this looks like a hard game." And I was like, "Yeah, I mean, you're probably right. Let's go back to playing Kirby, man."
Yeah,
it's a little bit of a hard game.
Yeah,
I don't think I'd be able to tackle that at 4 years old.
I certainly wouldn't. But yeah, let's talk about your preview. What'd you think? You've played the game. I haven't, so tell me about it.
So we played a very narrow vertical slice of Tears of the Kingdom. The demo was in two parts. The first part of the demo, and to be clear, for those of you that are listening that have never attended a media preview event, which I hope is most of you, it's not a demo like in the traditional sense. Like, it's not like Nintendo built like an eShop demo with like splash screens that say thanks for playing and all that stuff. When I say demo, I just mean that I'm sitting on a couch and I've got a Treehouse rep right next to me. I got lucky and I got JC from the Treehouse. He and I go back a ways, so it was great to see him. So JC is guiding me through two different, essentially, save files on Tears of the Kingdom. The first one is exactly where Aonuma did the 10-minute demo a few weeks back. So I'm there, and the whole point is just there's stuff everywhere, and I have to learn all of Link's new abilities. So I got to use Ultra Hand, I got to use Fuse, I got to use Ascend, I got to use Recall, and get good practice time with each of those. And that was like 10 minutes. The goal of that was to solve some puzzles. And actually, the one new thing I learned from that part of the demo, because we've seen all those powers before, was that Koroks are back. Like, I had to find two Korok seeds in the demo.
Yeah, because that was something like in some of that footage, I'm like, I see the one Korok just being like, hey, I'm right here, guys. But they didn't actually show anything with collecting Koroks.
Right. So that was kind of the interesting part. I've been playing through Breath of the Wild to kind of just get my head back into the universe ahead of this preview event, as well as just ahead of the release of the game. So I was kind of already in the mode of, okay, how do I solve these things? How do I resolve these challenges presented to me? And I just breezed through that 10-minute part of the demo. So they just had me start screwing around. Because it turns out, if you've been finding Korok seeds for a while, finding more of them is not an issue.
Is it like the same? Are there tweaks that you've seen as far as like the way to find them? Or is it just
there are definitely tweaks, because Ultra Hand, you know, can move anything.
So it behaves
much like Magnesis, but you can pick up wooden logs if you want to. So one of the two puzzles was, I don't know how to describe them, but there's a class of Korok puzzle in Breath of the Wild where you see two rock formations and you have to make them match using Magnesis. So it was a take on that, but it was like a weird kind of formation of blocks, and I had to grab one piece of it and rotate it so that on all sides from every angle it looked like I had formed a square. And you know, it was just to kind of get you used to the idea of rotation with Ultra Hand. And the other one was that there was just a little sprout sticking out of the ground, and I solved it quite by accident. I was playing around with Fuse, and I had attached a Zonai flamethrower to a stick. And so every time Link would swing the stick with the flamethrower, just fire would shoot out in all directions in front of him. And so I saw this little sprout and I was like, I'm going to burn that. And I did, and a Korok came out. So I was like,
"That was my head."
He just
an X goes over the screen, and it's like, you can't get that Korok.
It's like a Pikmin dying. You just see the little ghost go up.
I fortunately did not kill him. But what was interesting, and I double checked my embargo notes from Nintendo to make sure I could talk about this, the Koroks didn't know who Link was. So
interesting.
I got like, hey, you're not Hestu. Why can you see me? And I was like, how do they not know this? How are they unaware of who Link is? He found 900 of them.
I was going to say, they only know who you are if you have the golden poop in your inventory carried over from the last game. It's the one thing that carries over from your save file is the golden poop.
I am so worried that Hestu's gift is going to be back. Like, I am so worried that they're going to troll us again. They're going to be hey, congrats. It's
like, honestly, not one of my favorite things about Breath of the Wild, but like something that I really love is the design of the Korok seeds, and that it's just like there's always something to find, and there's so stinking many of them that
emphasis
it's kind of like just
stinking.
just explore around the world and find these, and you hit a point where it's really diminishing returns. Like, you get a lot of inventory slots, and I forget exactly like what the breakdown is, but like you get like half of the Korok seeds, you there aren't that many inventory slots left as you creep up to the, what is it, 800, 900 in the total game.
Yep.
And that's why the golden poop is such a good move, because it is just like, why did you do this, guys? Like, just,
yeah, like,
just
what was the point? Don't. Yeah, it was definitely interesting to see them question who Link is. But it was also kind of like, okay, cool. I can see where, you know, what would you replace Koroks with, right? Like, because they were simple, yeah, like, kind of just meaningless little puzzles, and it would be hard to find a comparable time sink, because I still get the impression that Tears of the Kingdom is very much designed with portable play in mind. I always said that in Breath of the Wild, shrines were this game's method of like giving you bite-sized challenges to digest, like if you had just a little bit of time to play the game, like you had 10 minutes, you could go to a shrine rather than try to, say, you know, free a divine beast. So yeah. I think that they still, you know, at least the inclusion of the Korok seeds is kind of a little nod to the fact that this is a game designed for a portable console.
Yeah. Now you were playing it docked, I assume.
Yeah. So, okay. So the setup was, there were 5 demo stations in the area, and all of them were on the new Switch, the Zelda Edition OLED, but they didn't let us take them out or look at them.
Yeah.
I was very jealous. Like, they had one in, they even had like a little glass display case with the Link amiibo. I was like, can I just tap it on the controller and see? They wouldn't let me, even though we know what it does. I still just wanted to do it, but they wouldn't allow that. So I got to see them up close, but no, I only got to play in docked mode.
Did the vision, I mean, you said you've been replaying some Breath of the Wild, like resolution wise, just eyeballing it, did it feel pretty comparable visually with Breath of the Wild?
Yes and no. So the draw distance is significantly greater. Like, it looks it draws out a noticeable amount more than Breath of the Wild did. However, I did note that some of the technical pitfalls of Breath of the Wild still exist. So during one section of the demo, this was like not during mine. So initially, like, the setup was the treehouse played a little bit to show us first, and then we played. And during the treehouse portion, they started just whipping out fire arrows by using fuse. They were fusing a fire fruit to arrows to create like homemade fire arrows on the fly, and they were just igniting tons of grass. And there was definitely noticeable slowdown, like when there was a lot of, you know, physics interactions going on. Like, enemies were running around, they were catching fire, stuff was blowing up, and the game pretty much dropped in exactly the same way I would have expected Breath of the Wild to drop under those same circumstances.
Sure. I like that the treehouse people were like, y'all want to see us break the game real quick? Like,
oh yeah.
I like that they were the ones that did it. Let's stress test this live in front of the press.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, one thing that I was thinking about, and I've always had a hard time articulating this to a degree, but I find that though Breath of the Wild was not very performant in places, that it seldom had an impact on my enjoyment of the game, because the controls remained responsive. And I think that's a huge difference. I saw this tweet from John Linneman over at Digital Foundry talking about how Star Fox on the SNES runs at 7 frames per second. And he's like, and you don't really care because it still controls well at 7 frames.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what I see with Breath of the Wild. And I can't really say much about Tears of the Kingdom because I didn't experience a ton of frame drops, but it's definitely, don't go in expecting it to be dramatically improved from a frame pacing perspective over the original. It's probably still going to slow down the way you would expect Breath of the Wild to in spots, but moment to moment gameplay feels great.
I will say, I noticed I think we're all replaying Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, yeah,
replaying
I am as well.
That.
My wife is literally playing it downstairs as we're recording.
Replaying that, I'm noticing that, honestly, that game has been cleaned up a lot since launch. Like, there are definitely spots where I remembered it chugging, and I'm playing through it now, and I'm like, this actually runs fine now. So that was nice to see. That game has gotten cleaned up quite a bit, because it was much more rough when it first came out.
Yeah, because they, I mean, I think they kind of had like stealth updates along the way with the DLC.
Oh yeah,
because
yeah, even just like Kakariko used to be a huge problem, and I got to Kakariko, I'm like, this runs fine now, so that's nice.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. I will say the only time I saw a slowdown in Tears of the Kingdom was in those like heavy, like lots of effects going on moments, like walking around, even traveling between and traveling between the ground and the sky. I noticed no slowdown, like
that's impressive.
Which I was pretty impressed by, because you're going way up there.
It's probably like completely swapping out every LOD on screen at the same time. Like that's got to be demanding.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
I'm really curious to see, like, is that the kind of thing where, like, do you go faster or slower depending on how it's loading? Like, can't wait for the timing.
So
just to see, like, if there is any kind of difference.
I'm unable to disclose full details, but what I can say is that I got to use a heretofore unannounced means of traveling to the sky.
Oh.
And I don't know how much I'm allowed to say, so I'll say this. It's not like a teleportation. It's definitely like you experience the travel of it. And I got to watch the whole thing happen. And that to me, you know, there was no like frame stutter, no slowdown.
Awesome.
Link's speed seemed to remain constant. I was able to mess with the camera and move it around and see where he was in relation to the ground versus the sky. They definitely nailed the feeling of traveling between those two. And I was a little worried about it because with Link's new power, Ascend, there's a very obvious like animation that masks a loading transition, right? Like when he's swimming through. We all know what that's doing. You know, it's masking the load time, which it's a smart way to do it, but it still is an obvious move. And there's none of that when you travel to the sky. So I don't know how they managed to stream data in without the game just grinding. But they did it, and it's really smooth.
And is it, I assume it's similar performance levels dropping back down to the ground?
Yeah. So cool. I was a little restricted in when and where I was allowed to drop to the ground, because the demo
straight onto Hyrule Castle.
I know, right? The demo was a very, very much an on rails experience. Like if we were told, like, please don't go this way, please don't go that way. I also don't know if I was playing the final build of the game, which, you know, was announced to have been completed before this event occurred. But I don't know if that's what was on these units.
Sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if there is some kind of limitations to what was on these systems, but who knows?
Yeah,
just
exactly.
So nobody could steal them and run away with them.
Right. Like, remember at E3, what was it, 2016? Somebody tried to steal the Breath of the Wild demo off of Wii U.
Yeah.
So you'd never know. And maybe Nintendo was being super cautious and had a limited build on there. But what I can say is that Treehouse was basically like, hey, please don't go do that. Please don't go do this. You know, we want you to stay kind of in this very small area. And I say very small because obviously we know how big Hyrule is in Breath of the Wild. And I was confined to like two different sky islands and one Bokoblin encampment for the majority of the demo that I played. And I know that that is just a tiny fraction of what we're going to see in the final game. But when I was allowed to travel between them, I saw no discernible drop in performance. I think there's, you know, not even really like a huge amount of pop in. Like I hate to say it because it's the only thing I can compare it to. But Fortnite on the Switch, like when you drop out of the battle bus and you go down, it is a bad time. Like it is very, very rough. And that's the closest thing to it. And, you know, I don't know how Monolith and Nintendo pulled it off, but they managed to make that transition from sky to ground and back seamless. Like it feels very natural. And it should, because it's kind of the core mechanic of the game. In a sense.
So control wise, any kind of differences or tweaks from Breath of the Wild into Tears of the Kingdom?
A little hard to call that out right now. And the reason I say that is because enemies have changed. So even your like base level Bokoblins have different attack patterns than they did in Breath of the Wild. So I ran in initially, like, ready to go. I'm like, they're Bokoblins, I'll kill them easy. And I just, you know, I'm pretty good at doing flurry rushes. And I was like, I'll just, you know, sidestep or backflip and then light them up. I could not pull off a single flurry rush during my demo. So instead, it kind of became this frantic, like, okay, let me hit them till they drop something, and then I'm going to fuse whatever they drop to whatever I'm holding. And so the flow of combat was very different. But I would say, if you are familiar with how Link the character behaves and feels, like the weight of his movements, the speed of his run, the height of his jump, like all of that feels exactly the same. Where he really differs is in, you know, you basically swap out runes for these new abilities that again, I don't know the origin of them, but they seem very obviously tied to his arm. So I'm just going to say his arm's powers.
I mean, one of them is literally Ultra Hand. Like, it's in the name.
Exactly.
We find out that it's actually Ascend Elbow.
You find the hidden Zonai tomb of Gunpei Yokoi, where you find the sacred Ultra Hand.
It's the fuse wrist, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Fused ligament, like.
Exactly. Yeah, it's all in the wrist. But they, So the new abilities are kind of what makes the flow of combat more interesting, and it does seem that enemies, by and large, are smarter. You know, I mentioned it early on in the preview, but one of the things that really surprised me was, as I was charging into this Bokoblin encampment, there's like a gate. And the Bokoblins see me coming, and they break it down themselves so that they can push a huge spiked ball through and try to kill me with it.
Oh,
that's awesome.
Yeah, it was. It was like, at one, the first time it happened, I was like, oh man, this is rad. And I just watched it come towards me. and it killed me immediately. Ooh. Because it hit like an improvised bomb that was right next to Link. I just wasn't paying attention. I was like marveling over the AI. I was like, oh, that's cool. Oh, I'm dead. So I went back at it, and this time I was like, I know what to do with this. Like, we saw this in the first trailer, so I used recall and I watched it roll back up, and I don't know why, but I was kind of expecting it to kill them, even though that doesn't make a lot of sense, because it's not like it's rewinding it with momentum, it's just rewinding it to where its original state. And while that's happening, though, the Bokoblins and everything else are frozen, so I'm just running up and taking it to him while this ball moves backwards. But it's definitely a really cool experience to see these enemies that you think you have a read on, that you think you know, and they're doing all kinds of new stuff.
That is like incredibly exciting to hear, because it's a lot of the, you know, we talk about the reused map in the game, and my, outside of just my belief, let the Zelda team cook. I feel like they've proven their worth, but I kind of just want to see the tweaks that they make to the existing map. And I kind of didn't really expect to be like, what are the tweaks they're going to make to the existing enemies? And that is like a thrilling part of looking forward to this game, is that like, oh, that these patterns that I feel like, as I'm replaying Breath of the Wild right now, I'm seeing like a lot of these, like, oh, I can go flurry rush these Bokoblins. Like you said, you go in, you're like, I got this, don't worry. And then they do something different, and you're like, uh-oh.
Yeah, it's really cool to be surprised in that way. And I was really happy to see that, you know, the enemies have gotten smarter. Like, they're expecting the player to have a baseline understanding of this universe, it feels. You know, they want to provide an additional layer of challenge.
I guess, you know, you're not really playing from the beginning of the game. Does it feel like everything's pretty reset from Breath of the Wild as far as like Link's? I guess he doesn't really carry over any abilities.
Yeah, because the runes,
I assume he's going back to like three hearts again.
So that's tough, because my demo, I don't know where in the game it took place.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We were given like no context, which I prefer, because it's way easier to write a preview for a game when you don't know any of the story details.
Keeps you safe from some spoilers too, which is
exactly,
always nice.
Exactly. And I know there are some people that are going to say the Korok thing is a spoiler, and I'm sorry, but you know, it's one of the few things I learned. But they, so my demo started with Link having like a massive amount of hearts, like 15 or so. And so I think they did that just because they were kind of throwing us in the deep end and having us figure stuff out. Like, I had to travel through a very cold area with no elixirs and no warm clothes to wear. So, you know, they were just kind of like, here, you'll survive. It's fine. You'll make it because we gave you enough hearts to make it. But for all I know, that's a part of the game where you're supposed to only have three or whatever.
Sure.
Link definitely feels powered down, though. And I think some of that's obvious. You know, like we've seen in the trailers for the game up to this point. He's in very different clothes in the sky. He has, you know, the Master Sword is decayed, broken.
Yeah, he's punished Link.
Yeah, exactly. He's been through some stuff. And so that Link, you know, is definitely going to be weakened. And if my inventory in the demo was anything to go by, you don't start out with very good stuff. Like, I had tree branches and sticks, literally. And the point was more, and I have a feeling, and this is pure conjecture, it's not based on anything, but I have a feeling that good weapons are going to be a lot harder to come by because of the fuse mechanic. I think Nintendo wants people to improvise their arsenal a lot more in this game than they did in Breath of the Wild. I honestly think that
double down on weapon degradation. Let's go.
Yeah. I found myself when like something that I had that I wanted to hold on to was starting to degrade and I was getting that flash in red, I would just fuse it with whatever was nearby. And I would be like, okay, I've got a little bit more time, I think.
Yeah. So when you fuse stuff, does that sort of repair the base item, or how does that affect durability?
So I couldn't get an answer. I asked, and I couldn't get an answer on specifically how weapon durability is affected by fusion. But I do know, just from anecdotal experience with the mechanic, that it at least somewhat repairs the weapon. Like it. So if you were like one hit away from your weapon being destroyed, mm-hmm. you're not going to fuse it and then just get one more hit with it. You're going to get a few. And I don't know exactly how many or you know, maybe it could even be that it fully brings it back to whatever its full durability would be as a fused weapon. But you can also unfuse weapons at any time. And I hate to say it, but I just did not clock whether taking a weapon near its breaking point and then fusing it and unfusing it would restore anything. I don't think it will, but it's also just one of those things that in the moment when I was there, I didn't think to track.
Yeah, I do like to go back, though, to you commenting on like kind of doubling down on the durability, Neil. Like, I do like that because I feel like the most common complaint I see for people who are okay with the durability, but ultimately don't like, yeah, like from our own Matt Zawaniak.
To give you a little context, Steve, we're also we've been doing a 3D Zelda game club over the past year and a half.
Ooh.
And it's me, John, and then, you know, you. GVG contributor Matt Zawadniak, and then Alex DeFreitas, who's our podcast editor, now guest because he's got a big boy job. But like, yeah, Matt and I have disagreed on things.
I was gonna say because the main complaint I was hearing from him is that like the initially in the game that idea of scrounging for weapons is really fun. But then as you go, you wind up with this, you essentially keep an inventory of really powerful weapons that you like, and you don't really need to scrounge anymore. And so leaning the game more into that and saying, no, you're not going to get powerful weapons, like, or you're at least not going to find them as easily. Like, you have to just constantly be scrounging and putting things together. Like, that really does feel like it is addressing the problem people had with the durability system, just not in the way that some people expected them to do it. But I love it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that John and I were actually talking about this on the air recently. I think Breath of the Wild is at its best when Link is at his worst, because it forces you to carefully consider your options in all things. Like, when you have three hearts and no stamina upgrades, you have to very carefully pick and choose your battles, whether that battle is a Bokoblin encampment or whether it's strategically making your way up a rock face, trying not to mm-hmm. fall all the way down. And I think that forcing the player to be a bit more thoughtful in how they approach the world in general really extracts a lot of fun from the game. Like it really kind of makes the design of the game shine. And my hope is that moment before you're all powerful lasts much longer in Tears of the Kingdom.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Keep the player a little. Well, that's people liked. Was it Eventide ever? Eventide Isle.
Yeah.
In Breath of the Wild. Like the reason that level works so well is that it puts you back to starting the game, and it puts you back at that level, but says, okay, we're putting you back to where you were, but now you've learned. So now we're going to have you do way more complicated stuff, but back at the level where you started. That's why that works so well. And so, yeah, if you can recreate that energy throughout the entire game, that's just a huge improvement for me.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I feel like, you know, from what I saw, it definitely felt like the difficulty was higher than the baseline difficulty of Breath of the Wild. But again, this is one encampment. I did get, you know, and it was, I doubt we're going to see encampments like this all over the world, but it was a cool way to kind of realize that Bokoblins have upped their game a little bit. I did get to fight the new boss Bokoblin, which was really cool. And I encountered other enemies that I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about.
I was going to ask if you saw anything other than Bokoblins, but I guess the answer to that is TBD.
Yes, I saw an enemy everyone knows about that I'm not sure I'm allowed to mention by name.
Ganondorf.
Obviously, I ran into Ganon on a sky island.
Yeah. He's just hanging out there. He's like, yo, what's up, bro?
Yeah, he's like, hey, just checking in on you, trying to kill you.
Yeah.
thought I'd come to you this time instead.
We haven't really talked much about the sky islands themselves. Do those feel like, does that feel like, is there a lot of like new stuff? Does it kind of just feel like more of the overworld?
So it feels very different. The makeup of the sky islands is what I find most interesting, because they do not mesh at all with the design of the world. So again, though, this is based on a grand total of three sky islands that I've seen. The two that were in the primary focus of the demo were, they almost looked like parts of a building that had broken off and flown up into the sky rather than like naturally occurring land masses. And this could be total BS, but in my experience, Zonai tech is much more prevalent on sky islands. So Zonai items are kind of all over the place on these sky islands, which I guess makes sense because your only means of traversal, right? Like I haven't found in the bit of the game that I played, I did not find a single means of propulsion for a vehicle that was not a piece of Zonai technology. I had to use Zonai technology to make vehicles move. And I suspect that's going to be true. Like you're not going to find like a mushroom that, you know, makes your,
right.
Makes your vehicles go.
This isn't
go.
Mario, dang it.
Exactly. And so I think that may very well be kind of the main conceit of the game. Like you're all these cool things that Link can do are going to be tied in some way back to the Zonai and back to their technology, which through some magical event becomes unearthed, because obviously we played through all Breath of the Wild and we saw very little Zonai stuff, and now it's everywhere. So I'm guessing that something triggers, you know, some series of events, much like the unearthing of shrines and towers at the beginning of Breath of the Wild, triggers these Zonai items to start appearing all over Hyrule.
And do you only see the Zonai items in the sky islands, or are they also on the ground, at least from what you saw?
So the way it was described to me was that Zonai items can be naturally occurring, and those are ones that you can just pick up and use. But then you can also purchase Zonai items.
Okay.
So I don't know how you get it. Well, I have a feeling I know how you get them. But you use these. So there are, and I've only seen these on Sky Islands. There are literally gacha machines on the Sky Islands, like gigantic capsule vending machines that you dump Zonai cores into, and they spit out just tons of little capsules, like purple capsules, and you pick them up, and each capsule contains a piece of Zonai tech that you can then store in your inventory. But the ones you just find laying around the world, like in the Aonuma demo, you saw he just saw some fans. You cannot grab those and keep them. They just are there and they stay there. I don't know. I was told they eventually respawn if you take them and use them. But I wasn't. I'm going to assume that there's either the exact Blood Moon mechanic from Breath of the Wild or something very similar, and that's when those items reset.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Well, they have to. I mean, that for anybody who doesn't know, that Blood Moon is just there to manage system memory for keeping track of all the things that you've done. If you just erase it, cool. We don't have to worry about the fact you chopped down that tree earlier.
Yep.
So yeah, it makes sense that something like that would come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my guess.
So what, like, from the gacha machines, because I know, during the Anuma demo, he picked up some Zonai cores. That was when I, like, did the Leo pointing meme. Like, it says Zonai. But, so, like, with the items that you're getting from these gacha machines, is it just stuff to, like, use in, like, building contraptions? Or is it also, like, stuff to, like, cook with or do upgrades with or something like that? Or did you not see anything of that?
So that's a good call out. You can actually get all kinds of Zonai tech, and there's some that I can talk about and some that I can't.
Naturally.
But cooking was like a really good call out, because there is a portable cooking pot. So
sweet.
Yeah, one of the Zonai items is literally just a one-time use pot. So you take it out, you put it on the ground, and then you can cook up as many meals or elixirs as you want without having to find a pot out there in the world.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I honestly thought, I was like, that is probably the single most recognizable quality of life improvement in Tears of the Kingdom that I've seen so far. Because one of my main gripes playing back through Breath of the Wild is like, I want to use the cooking mechanic because I have a bunch of stuff, but it's so annoying to find a place to cook.
Yeah.
So it was really cool that they kind of thought of that. I think they realized people probably used that mechanic far less than they otherwise would have. But there are other items too. Like, there are flamethrowers. There's, you know, balloons. There's all kinds of stuff. And you can, to be clear, Zonai items aren't classified as like, this one's for vehicles and this one's for weapons. Like, if I wanted to, there's a Zonai item that we've seen that's a steering wheel, essentially. Like, you see Link standing at it in some of the old trailers, like when he's riding this bird-shaped jet through the sky, he's standing at it. You can take that control stick and attach it to a stick if you want and beat people with it instead of using it for a vehicle. Early on in the demo, the treehouse was trying to talk me through stuff. And they're like, oh, you know, these are Zonai items. And I'm like, oh, dude, there's rockets. And I like attached a rocket to an arrow and just fired it off, and it just went flying away. And he's like, you just wasted one of the most valuable items in this demo. So, I mean, but there seemingly is no limit on what you can do. Like, I took that cooking pot I mentioned and I attached it to a shield. It was completely useless, but it let me do it. So I just had a shield with like a cooking pot on top of it.
They really did just make like the hardest game ever to QA.
Oh yeah, they really did.
Like, you just combine, yeah.
Well, it's so funny too, because there are so many things. Like, I was trying to make a hot air balloon, and I took the Zonai balloon and I put it down on the ground, and I just kind of stared at it, and I'm like, do something. And finally, like, JC from the treehouse was like, how do hot air balloons work, Steve? And I was like, with hot air, JC. he's like, how do you think you make hot air? I was like, I know how to make hot air. And I took out a flamethrower and I put it in the balloon, and then suddenly it was a functioning hot air balloon. I was like, I should have figured that out.
I love seeing them apply like the chemistry physics stuff that they made in Breath of the Wild and just expand it to a ridiculous degree.
I can't wait for their next GDC talk. Oh. I really hope they do another GDC talk.
I truly hope so, because it feels like they took the rules that they made for Breath of the Wild, that really interesting physics engine that they explained, like you mentioned, at GDC, and kind of expanded on it in a lot of ways. I think that there are going to be so many really cool, really interesting things that people come up with when they get the game. Like, I'm not the most creative person when it comes to, you know, building gadgets and stuff like that. So I'll be interested to see what people do when the game gets out there, and you know, those people who have kind of built reputations for breaking Breath of the Wild get their hands on this.
It's going to be nonsense. Yeah. It's definitely out of my depth a little bit. I'm like you, where like I will watch people do wild stuff with this game, but I'm probably just going to be like, how do you make a hot air balloon?
I did try to make the flying machine in Breath of the Wild and could never get it to work.
Oh, you mean the one with like octo balloons?
No, the one where you take like two, you put a minecart in another minecart and then you stand on the top one and you magnesis the bottom one.
Oh,
you can just fly indefinitely. I've done stuff with like I've made like dumb flying rafts.
Yeah.
With
usually
octo.
Like it just crashes and then I'm like, uh-oh. We're
the
done.
Effort to just continuously keep adding balloons to it in the right spot before it just drops you off. Yeah.
Yep.
I definitely struggled with making a flying machine in the demo. You know, it was made obvious to me at one point that I'd have to, and it took me quite a bit to kind of sort out how the physics of flying in Tears of the Kingdom work. But once you do, I think it makes a lot more sense. And I was kind of applying some weird, like, circular logic to how I should build a flying machine. So one thing that I don't think they've mentioned before, or at least not spelled out, is that there are like floating platforms that Link can use to get places.
I think they showed that in that like the last trailer where he goes through the bubble, he jumps on some platforms in the sky.
Yeah. This isn't that, but it is similar in nature. So it's like a big metal platform. And you can raise it up and it'll just stay where you left it.
Oh, okay.
And from there, you can affix like means of propulsion to it, like fans or rockets or whatever. And I kept putting them on in the wrong directions, thinking that they would give me like I was orienting them in a way that didn't give it enough lift to get where I needed to go. And I tried everything. I tried like putting fans on the bottom of it. I tried putting fans in the back of it, like angled back so they'd go forward and up a little bit, but they didn't provide enough thrust. It was an interesting lesson, like in how Tears of the Kingdom's physics work, to have to do trial and error with a bunch of different vehicles until I found one that could consistently fly. But once you do and it clicks, you're like, oh, I know how these work now. And I think it's going to be a lot of that. Like a lot of players are going to get it. They're going to struggle a little bit. But once they figure it out, they're going to be able to create some real wild stuff.
You're really making me want to go play Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts again.
That is, I have a feeling that that's going to be a trend for a while. Like people comparing those two games.
It is hilariously similar. I've enjoyed the slight bit of salt out of Rare. Of just being like, oh, so suddenly we like this. Nuts and Bolts is great and everybody should play it.
I've heard that. I've never played it.
You should play it.
You can compare Tears of the Kingdom to Nuts and Bolts directly. Perfect time.
I was going to say, I have a little less than a month to figure that out.
Yeah. Comparison video when?
I want to get back. Like, you talked about, or at least I feel like you specifically talked about how like the first part of the demo was in that area on the ground. Was the rest of the demo just going to the sky islands and stuff like that? Or was there something else?
So the second part of the demo was really interesting. So and I can't talk about it in full because like I mentioned, there's a method of getting to the sky that I'm not allowed to talk about. But basically they drop you down in front of this encampment and they have a pin on a sky island, and basically JC grabbed the controller, looked it up. You know, there's a mechanic through which you can view pins the same as you did in Breath of the Wild, right? So you have like a viewfinder where you can see your pins in the world in real time. And so
he
looks straight
up. Slate. This doesn't make any sense.
I can't.
He looks through his hand, Neil.
Yeah, he looks.
He
between
makes
his
binoculars
fingers.
With his hands, and he puts them up to his eyes, and he can see the pins.
To be fair, I legitimately do not know how it functions. Nintendo did not explain to me why he has that ability. I asked if he still has his Sheikah slate, and they just said you'll find out on May 12th. So I do not know how he's able to do that, but he showed me that I could see a pin in the sky. And he's like, you need to get to that. So I was like, all right, great. And I was like, well, I'm just going to kill everyone. And that's the easiest way to solve my problem. So I run into the encampment. I fight my way through. There's a boss bokoblin. And I fortunately had the foresight to use fusion on my spear. I had a spear that was like a starter, like a Boko spear, you know, like two attack, right? And I mentioned earlier that they rolled this gigantic ball at me. I fused that gigantic ball, which added a whopping 19 to the attack stat of the Boko spear. So now I had this like very formidable weapon, and I was able to just stab the ever-loving hell out of that out of that boss bokoblin. And then every time he'd fall down, I would ready an arrow, I would knock an arrow, and then I would push up on the D-pad to go into fusion, add a bomb flower to the arrow, and just crit him with an arrow to the face. And fortunately, I started pushing him back far enough to where the bokoblins had rather unwisely stacked up a gigantic number of explosive barrels. And I shot him, and it detonated all the barrels, and it killed him and like all his buddies. And then I was left to kind of explore their encampment and find a bunch of items. One thing that I'll say that is really cool is now you can use like every part of the bokoblin, if you will. So every time you pick up like a monster part, it tells you how much attack it would add if you fused it to a weapon. So I picked up like a boss bokoblin's tooth, and it was like, hey, this will add 2 to your attack if you fuse with it. And I was like, that's gross, but also neat. And they also have interesting stuff like you've probably seen in the trailers, like a lot of bokoblins have horns now. Those horns not only add attack, but they add attack range. So like if you have a sword, it'll be the horns will be strapped to the end of the sword, effectively adding to the effective range of your attacks, which is really, really kind of fun for the strategic element of it. Like if you have, you know, a sword and you don't want to get too close, you can add something that's long to the end of it and still fight with it. But I ransacked it. I go to the sky using an undisclosed means of travel. And then once I'm on the sky, the goal was to locate a treasure chest, which was on yet another further away island. So the island I landed on was just like, hey, there's nothing here. Build something to get to where you really need to go. And so I had to kind of master the art of aviation, and I got to yet a second sky island. And the thing that kind of sucks about being in a guided demo is that there's a million islands in between the one I need to go to and the one I was on, and I can't go to them. So I'm like looking around, yeah, seeing all these really interesting things. And I'm like, if I was playing this by myself, I would be jumping off at every possible opportunity to go explore. You know, and I can see like enemies milling around. I can see Zonai like bots, sentinels or whatever hanging out. And one thing I will say, they're friendly. Like the Zonai bots are friendly. Oh. I expected them to try to kill me, but they don't.
Do they just hate Aonuma?
You can engage in behavior that will make them fight you, but by default they will not. So
interesting.
They will warn you that they're going to attack as well. So if you do something near them that they don't like, they'll say you'll see a little word bubble pop up, and it'll say something to the effect of, you are engaging in suspect behavior. You're engaging in threatening behavior. And if you keep doing it, they will attack. But if you just keep going on your way and you leave them alone, they don't bother you. So you can walk right past them and they leave you alone. But yeah, it feels like they're just cops. So
I'm not speeding, I swear, Zonai.
Yeah, I'm wondering if Ganon maybe corrupts them somehow at some point. Like maybe they're initially friendly and then they're not. But
it seems like the play of Guardian, just another way that you can have a Guardian like entity. Right.
But they're so small. They're almost reminiscent of what was his name? Robbie in Skyward Sword.
Oh, no. the little automaton dude. Yeah.
They almost remind me of him. And so it's very interesting to see them kind of hanging out and just leaving you alone, because I kind of expected they would all just want to kill you, but they'll fight monsters. They'll leave you be. They're kind of, it seems that they're on your side. But then, you know, I didn't get to get too close to them in my portion of the demo. I just saw one or two, like in the very first tutorial section, but in the more open-ended part, I saw them off in the distance, but nowhere near where I was, so I couldn't interact with them too much. But then I get to this island, and there's, and I believe this is another island we've seen in a trailer before, because it has a kind of these four arrow shaped hatches that are open, and there's like a big, like, for lack of a better term, like a gyroscope looking thing in the middle of it. And mm-hmm. I have to use Ultra Hand to rotate it. And when I rotate it, this entire other sky island is rotating along with it. And so my goal is to orient it in such a way that I can get to this treasure chest that's on it, that's hanging by a vine. So I have to basically get the treasure chest to flip onto a part of the sky island so that it's level for Link to open it. And then, you know, then I have to get Link over to it. And that's the easy part, because you can just climb. So I rotate it into place, which is done like in a very weird way. When you rotate stuff with Ultra Hand, you engage Ultra Hand, you lock onto it the same way you would an item with Magnesis, but then you hold R and you use the D-pad to move the item. And I mentioned this in the preview, but it helps to like envision every single thing that you're rotating with Ultra Hand as being a cube, because it kind of behaves that way. Like you're turning a cube over and over in your hand, up, down, left, right, until you get it to where you want it to be. And then this is the worst part. This is probably the most annoying part of the demo, is that I get this treasure chest and I open it, and my reward is an old map. And I'm like, oh boy, we're just getting started. And that's when the demo ends. Like the treehouse cuts you off right there.
Oh.
And so I asked them, I'm like, where does the map go? And they're like, you'll find out on May 12th.
That's I was like, so
that is so
evil.
Dirty. Like, I'm hooked now. Like, I need to know what I do with this. But they like actually like take the controller back and reset the game at that point. Well,
and you know, once you do find the final game, you're gonna go back to that, and that map leads to like a wooden treasure chest with 5 rupees in it.
Yeah. Oh yeah, exactly. Like, it's gonna be something really
it does,
dumb.
It's hearing about like that rotation stuff, because we did a Skyward Sword as part of our game club recently, and that reminds me of the boss keys that you would rotate to fit in. Like it's I mean, you talked about using every part of the Bokoblin. I love that the Zelda team uses every part of the Zelda game.
Because
it's a lot of things sound like, oh yeah, I can see how that thing from 15 years ago might play into what they're doing in Tears of the Kingdom.
It's such a well-realized mechanic.
Is the map going to the underworld? Like, what's going on? Are these shrines? I have no idea.
I will say I saw no hint of an underworld. I believe there is one, but we didn't get to see it.
Yeah, because it looks like, I mean, from looking at some of the footage, like it seems like there are things that resemble shrines, but with that, you know, wispy green Ganondorf or Zoni mist or whatever. Like those seem to be shrine like entities, but it is still kind of wild that even after you know, media has played the game, we still have no idea. Like, is there a shrine replacement? Are there full dungeons? Is everything just on the overworld? Are these sky islands going to be mini shrines? Like, who knows?
Yeah, the demo that we got feels much more gameplay focused, like just teaching people about how the game works and not really what the game necessarily is, right? Because, I don't know. Are there shrines? Are there dungeons? Could, you know, do those things exist? I hope so. I certainly hope so. I believe there's strong evidence for them to exist, but... Nintendo's not talking about that stuff, and I guess to an extent they don't have to, right? Because the marketing has been so effective. Like this game is driving hype like you wouldn't believe, and I firmly believe that if you're on the fence about Tears of the Kingdom, you probably didn't play Breath of the Wild.
I can hear an argument pre Anuma 10-minute demo. Like between that, the last trailer, and what's coming out of, you know, this hands-on session, like I feel like that's where, like, if you were like, I don't know, they're just reusing the same map, it doesn't look that different. Like, I feel like a lot of this has been that moment of like, oh, so that's what they're doing. It is that, like, how they are doubling down on weapon degradation and you know, all that stuff breaking and doing things like refining the cooking. It just seems like they spent the past 6 years being like, how can we refine Breath of the Wild into something newer and even bigger, and hopefully is that's what they're doing.
Yeah. I feel like they did something really difficult here. They took a look at Breath of the Wild and tried to figure out what didn't work with that game. And that's a really hard task when you think about it, because Breath of the Wild is one of the best games ever made, and they're trying to poke holes in it. And you know, it's clear that the team didn't want to just make a game that was just for lack of a better term, like Breath of the Wild 2. They wanted to actually add something new to it. They didn't want to just settle for we're going to take Breath of the Wild and do more. They're actually doing something different mechanically, which is a risk, but I think it's going to pay off based on what I've played.
I'm incredibly excited.
Me too. Should we call that an episode?
Yeah, probably. Now I'm just gonna like remember that there was a South Park episode
before I watched that episode last night.
where Cartman's just like, I'm just gonna freeze myself, like that's what I'm gonna do with the next few weeks.
Oh yeah.
I'm like, it already is like taking off of work that Monday. Like it's time, baby. I'm ready for this.
I've got friends flying in so that we can just have like a week where we do not work and we just play Zelda. I think I'm going to take a break just to do my podcast, and that's going to be it. Like, but we're just going to power through the game as quickly as we can. When Breath of the Wild came out 6 years ago, we did the same thing.
Yeah. My wife was not there on day one when Breath of the Wild came out, but it was the kind of thing that she watched me play and then was like, yeah, I'll check this out. And then she wound up putting more time into the game than I ever did. so we are getting two copies of the game when it comes out. And yeah, I think at least one day the next week, we're just going to take off work, and one kid's going to be in school, the other kid's going to be at a babysitter. And we're just going to play Zelda.
Nice.
Are you investing in those Switch game vouchers? Because you could probably save a lot of money on two $70 games with those.
Well, I have one of them is $60 from Best Buy, and the other one is the collector's edition. So,
oh, okay. Never mind.
Yeah, because I was like in the parking lot. I think I was going to like pick up dog food or something, or it might have been at my puppy's like last dog training class when it was all the hubbub before the direct about how Zelda was going to be $70. I was like, hold on, babe, I got to pre-order this $60 before it goes up.
Yeah. Well, all right, Steve. Thank you very, very, very much for hanging out with us and talking about Zelda.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, yes, thank you.
Absolutely. We should find other times to have you on where we're not just using you for your knowledge of cool things. You know.
Well, I'm always glad to hang out with you guys. It's always a fun time, and we're always glad to have you guys on.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
we'll have to, you know, 2023 post Zelda. Resolutions as we get ready for the next Switch system, whenever that comes. We should start doing more stuff.
Watch.
Yeah.
Ugh. The hype cycle begins anew.
I'm not ready to start over.
I think so what the Zelda comes out May 12th, we're gonna start hearing a bunch of like, it's the NXX on like May 14th.
Yeah. As you know, Neil, Zelda, last big hitter for Switch. It's been widely reported until it wasn't. So this is where it ends.
Xenoblade 3 coming out. It's clear in the deck, or the DLC coming out. There's nothing for the second half.
That's
outside
true. They
of...
were like, they were like, people might think this Xenoblade DLC is a big hitter. So we gotta sneak that out before Zelda. Thanks for giving me that at a time when I won't have time to play it, Nintendo. You jerks. Check out all of the many things that Good Vibes Gaming does. They're wonderful people, and if you I don't have a prompt for an email for this one, just email us about things. How's your day going? Did you have a nice lunch? I got no listener mail prompts for this episode. Just figure something out and write into us at connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can follow us at ConnectivityNWR on Twitter. Steve, what's your Twitter handle?
You can find me at Steve M. Bowling on Twitter. I know, I use my real name. And then if you want to follow GVG, you can find us at GVG Official on Twitter.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.